The next presentation I'm actually going to do, it's on our workforce study that we did. Just going to review the results of that study, give a little background about it, and look at where we're going from the future. It's just the required disclosure slide, and I had nothing to disclose, no financial interest. And we did this study last year. It was kind of a, we started to make notice of kind of a perfect storm of events that had occurred. It's a combination of there was a decrease in applicants to podiatric medical schools, actually a decrease in applicants to all health professions in the early to mid-1990s. And combined with that, there is the public health problems of diabetes and obesity, which are now reaching epidemic proportions. And the kind of third factor in that mix is, besides the demographics of the general population, which the baby boomers are starting to move into that retirement age category, that also affects our population of podiatrists. We reflect the national demographics, where the average age of podiatric physicians is somewhere around 50 years old. And so as the population ages, we're also going to see the movement of the podiatrist into retirement, and then you've got that decreased students entering the school, so you have less doctors coming out to support them, and you have the increased demand for these services, because we're going to have more diabetes, more obesity, so you're going to have more health problems. So those were the issues that we were looking at, and we wanted to find out, have a study done to evaluate those and kind of come up with what are the possible scenarios to address these problems. As I said, these are the things that we looked at: an aging population, a decrease in applicants to the podiatry school, and a significant increase in diabetes and obesity. So we contracted with the Center for Health Workforce Studies, which is in at the University SUNY in Albany, New York, to do this study. And the last time a workforce study was done on podiatry, that was actually done in 1997 by Glenn Marcus. And his study really relied on the model of an HMO model of care. So the assumption was that HMOs were going to become the dominant force, and you'd have the gatekeeper, you'd have less need for specialists and less access to specialists. So he based his predictions on what would happen in the workforce from 1997 to 2010, based on the assumption that you're going to be dealing with predominantly HMOs. And as we know, there was that increase in HMOs, but that's really kind of fallen by the wayside, and you don't have that same HMO model at work anymore. And then you have the dilemma of the fact that you have a lot of attractive benefits to being in the field of podiatric medicine, good working conditions and earnings, but we had this decrease in podiatric medical students in the mid 1990s, and probably some of that, I mean, we were discussing this morning what happens with the economy. If you think about that time, that was when the economy was very, very good. And usually when there's good economic times, the students are anxious to get finished with their education, get out into the workforce, and because there are good job opportunities for them. As the economic times seem to get tougher, then you start to see an increase in graduate studies in general, and medicine as well, because they want to delay their entry into the workforce. And so that's why, actually, this year a lot of the medical schools are seeing a kind of a rebound in the number of applicants, and that's been steadily going up for the past few years. So we went from a high in 1995 to 96 of about 680 students or graduates to a low of 331 in 2006-2007, and that's created a shortfall, when you think about it, that's going to last quite some time into the future. The other factor that I don't know that was necessarily looked at as much in this study is the change in the postgraduate education and training. So as we move towards a model of a basic standard model of 3 years of postgraduate training for these new doctors of podiatric medicine, that's going to mean another delay of their entry into the workforce. You know, if it used to be a 1 or 2 year postgraduate training model, as you put a pretty standard 3 year model in, you're delaying when they enter into the workforce. And this chart just demonstrates, shows the changes in the total enrollment and then the applicant pool and then the graduates. And you can see there was just, here's your high back here's your high in 95, 96 and down to your low. And we're starting to see an increase again in both applicants and graduates, but it's going to take some time to make that up. So some of the things that they looked at as they did this study, they wanted to look at what the demand for care was, and they came up with a statistic about 90% of the U.S. population experienced foot problems each year. And the best statistics they could found was some Bureau of Labor Statistics from 2002. That podiatric physicians provide about 39% of all those foot care services, about 13% is by orthopedists, and then the other 37% is by physicians, primary care specialists, and physical therapists, and others, about 11%. So podiatric physicians treat about 5% of the U.S. population every year. And that just graphically will show the breakdown with the podiatrist the predominant amount of care, but other doctors a significant portion of care as well. So these were the as you talk about the future, you have to look at the aging of the population, the increase in obesity, and the subsequent increases on stresses on the foot and ankle related to obesity, and the increasing prevalence of diabetes. Another factor that I don't think they looked at in this study as well is that besides the health problems of obesity and diabetes, you also have a certain percentage of this baby boomer population that was very much into the fitness aspects that are going to want to remain active and fit as they move into their retirement years. And with that, there's going to probably be an increased level of kind of healthy people injuries as well. And I don't think that was even taken into account. And this just shows that graphically, how incredible the predicted rise is in diabetes and obesity related to the total population, which is on the bottom. And you can see diabetes is on almost a geometric increase there, which is really becoming an epidemic increase. And that, I believe the very recently released statistics from the CDC showed an even higher increase than they predicted in the number of people with diabetes. So after they looked at all these factors, they came up with basically five different scenarios that could be put in place to how are we going to deal with this shortfall? So what can we do? And they used a statistical forecasting model to make predictions of the supplies of podiatrists in each model. So we'll look at each of the different scenarios. The first scenario is just to assume the status quo. And that assumes that the current production levels continue into the future. It incorporates a modest increase in graduations out to 2010 expected as a result of actual enrollment and applicant increases in recent years. And our association recognizes the need to increase applicants to the schools of podiatric medicine. So that's been an active marketing effort on the part of the American Podiatric Medical Association, and it has shown some effect. As they say here, this increase will level off in 2010 at about 486 graduates per year, adjusted for attrition. And that's based on the last year for which there were reliable estimates on the actual total class size. The second scenario is the same as the first scenario, but it adds there is currently an application in process to develop a School of Podiatric Medicine in Pomona, California. They would get their first entering class in 2009 with the first graduates in 2013, and it's estimated they'll produce about 50 podiatrists per year. So this adds 50 DPMs annually to the supply starting in 2013, and then the total number of DPMs per year from 2013 on would be about 536. As you can see, that's still under that high where we were up around 600 and some graduates. Scenario three, same conditions as in the first two scenarios, but it includes a one-time permanent 10% increase in podiatric graduates for all existing schools beginning in 2012. That would be the earliest an immediate increase in class size could actually impact the graduation. So you're going to have the one more school opened up, which would bring their total schools to 9, and you would have a permanent 10% increase in the number of matriculants and then graduates from each of the schools. So under that scenario, from 2013 on, you would have 590 podiatrists per year. The fourth scenario, besides everything else that's been done in the previous three, would add an additional school that would graduate its first class in 2017. That class size would be 55, and that bumps up the number from 2017 on would be about 645 podiatrists per year. And then the final scenario has the same specifications as the previous ones, and it adds another school. So now you go from 9 schools to essentially to 11 schools. They would get their first class in 2021, and again, assuming 55 graduates per year. So from 2021 on under this scenario, you'd have 700 podiatrists per year. This is slightly larger than the peak historical production of 680 that occurred in 95 and 96. So, and this is by most standards, most people would say it's a pretty radical idea to essentially add 3 more schools of podiatric medicine from what we have now. And that still would just barely get us beyond what we were at for in 1995-96. And this just graphically shows all the different scenarios and shows how you can get up to the peak of scenario 5 as opposed to the status quo, which would leave you down around right around 500. So about a net, if you did the most that you could do, would be to increase the number of podiatrists per year from about 500 to about 700. And this is the projection of DPMs per 100,000 population under the 5 scenarios in standardized U.S. population growth from 2005 to 2030. So essentially, even with all of the most extreme efforts, opening new schools, increasing class sizes, you're still going to end up not meeting the population demands that are going to occur over the next 25 years. So essentially, it's in scenario 2, it would be higher than the low of 2006 and 2007, but there'd be nowhere enough to permit the profession to keep up the expected increases in the population. And just to maintain the population to ratio, a constant level of the future would require all podiatric medical schools to increase their production collectively by 10%, plus adding one new podiatric school in addition to the one that's already planned to be open. So that's just to maintain the same ratio, population ratio of DPMs, you'd have to get up to 10 schools, and you'd have to have that 10% increase in the class sizes. That doesn't take into effect the increased demand because of other external factors. So in order to increase the supply of DPMs enough to keep up with the population growth, podiatric medical schools would have to nearly triple their current production of graduates. Even greater increases in production would be required to keep up with the increase in demand for foot-related services created by the aging of the population and the predicted increases in the prevalence of diabetes and obesity. So you're going to come up with a significant shortfall of podiatric physicians related to their ability to provide their traditional level of service to the population. And when that happens, the patients are either going to have to, other professionals have to increase their share of the load for foot and ankle related problems, or the patients would have to go without the services. This is just a map of, in 2006, this shows the podiatric physicians per 100,000 of the populations. And you can see the very high concentrations in Florida and along the Northeast, with some disparities as you come along the Southeast corridor, places like Texas. And then you have a lot of areas where you see the white areas are where there are essentially are very low numbers of ratios of podiatrists per 100,000 of population. So it shows right now there's a lot of opportunity, but there seems to be a tendency for graduating residents to populate around learning centers and where they trained. So one of the things to keep in mind as we look at the potentially opening new schools is where do we want to open these new schools? Since there is traditionally where people are trained, they tend to stay. It might be important to locate a new school in Tennessee or Texas, or other options might be Washington, Oregon, or Minnesota, so you could start to balance out the distribution of the podiatrists in the country. And there's a couple ways that you can deal with the shortage besides just increasing the number of graduates, and one of those would be through the efforts of the existing podiatrists. So you have a population of podiatrists that are out there working now. What can they do to help meet the shortage demands? And one thing would be by tapping any excess capacity in the existing practices. In other words, they would have to work more and see more patients. That could also apply to people that were working less than full-time at this point, so they could provide the services to these additional patients. That would fill the gap to a degree. Another possibility is utilizing new techniques or technologies that give you a greater efficiency or greater productivity, thereby increasing the number of patients that you can see in any given time period. And the extent to which either of these options may be helpful in closing this supply-demand gap is difficult to determine without the appropriate data. This requires estimates of the excess capacity available in existing practices, and that information would probably have to be gained from some sort of survey. So it does give us something that we probably should look at as we look to the future. We get some of that information. We do a biannual podiatric practice survey, and we usually look at hours worked per week and number of patients seen and those types of things. So there may be the opportunity to gain some of that information. And this supply-demand gap that's probably going to develop has some positive potential for the profession and some negative potential. The positive part of this is traditionally professions with less supply, less than demand, enjoy relatively high incomes due to economic factors, assuming, of course, that other physicians continue to turn to podiatric physicians for assistance in dealing with the foot and ankle problems of their patients. This is one of the expected outcomes of any of the five scenarios examined in the study. The other positive implication of that is it should make recruiting and marketing efforts better to get more applicants into the schools because they're looking at a profession where there is a projected shortfall, so it should bode well for them economically. Adding two or three new podiatric medical schools would provide the profession with an important opportunity to balance the production of new podiatric physicians geographically across the United States, and that's an important factor that needs to be looked at as any new schools are anticipated or open. And as I said, it should help stimulate applicants to the school because they're looking at a profession where there is a shortage. And it helps any marketing programs that we might put out there. The negative implications is that if we don't respond to this, then the public may look at us negatively because we knew there was a shortage and we didn't take any action to address it. And that could create negative publicity, to which it may be very difficult for our profession to react effectively. It also could lead to some of our referral bases to start to look for other professionals to perform some of the tasks that DPNs would otherwise provide. And that's an important implication that other healthcare practitioners may start to take over the care of the foot and ankle if we don't address the problem. probably not something that's going to occur in the short term, but it is something that potentially could be a problem in the long term. The other thing is that it's not easy to start new schools. There's a lot of work that goes into it. It's a pretty demanding process. So the idea that, say, okay, we need three more schools, we need to get a total of 11 schools at a very minimum, there's a lot of cost, there's a lot of logistics, a lot of application problems, as well as the politics involved with opening a new school of podiatric medicine. And the other unknown is, okay, we're doing all this to increase the total number of podiatrists, but we have to also have that same piece where we're increasing the number of applicants to all of the schools, including the new schools, and we have to have enough applicant demand to be able to open these schools and keep them filled. So that's what the challenges ahead are. We need a careful strategic planning effort designed to define the goals and objectives for the profession and alternative actions for the future, and that's where we currently have a process going on called Vision 2015, which is starting to look at all of these pieces besides the education and the long-term goal of how we want to define the profession of podiatric medicine. We are also looking at those pieces that include student recruitment and student training postgraduately. We need a public relations effort to promote the profession to the public, and especially to prospective students, which we are doing, but we have to continue with those efforts. And we have to make efforts to research and develop and refine statistical models to help understand the outcomes and implications of different choices on different aspects of the profession. So from this study, one of the things we have is a statistical model where we can start to plug in some of the numbers. If numbers of applicants and matriculants to the schools start to change, we can start to plug in the numbers and see what that's going to do to the projections long term. We need to look at different we need to identify, understand, and predict the factors related to the demand for podiatric medical services by different segments of the population. So we need to know how much demand it's going to be when you have this number of increase in people with diabetes or obesity, or how much demand there's going to be because of the fact that people want to be active more in their later years. And we must identify, understand, and predict the factors related to the demand for entry into podiatric medicine. So we have to understand what's going to motivate a student to want to get into our profession. And we need to continue to define, refine, and standardize the scope of practice for podiatric medicine with special attention to relationships with other health professionals. And I think that's being done through our current Vision 2015 process. So the conclusion would be that this report indicates that the expansion of podiatric medical education capacity would help to meet the increasing demand for podiatric medicine services in the future with no significant detriment to the profession. Now, one of the things that really wasn't addressed in this study is that, and it's part of the public health issue, is in concert with what we see as this increased demand in obesity and diabetes, public health is looking to decrease obesity and diabetes. So that could have a significant factor. If we can be successful in our public health efforts to decrease diabetes and obesity in the United States, then that will lessen the demand and the shortfall gap that we're looking at in the future. Thank you very much. Yes, sir.
It's been projected that in 2010, I believe, there'll be more applicants, more graduates from podiatric medical schools than there will be residency positions. Is APMA doing anything to
Yeah, we have a task force that looks at that balance to make sure that we continue to have enough residency programs available for all graduates. And we are actively working in Residency Genesis. There's a couple ongoing projects, including besides reaching out to the programs that can potentially add more residents to their slots. We also have a very active residency genesis helpline for anyone that's interested in developing residency programs. The Council on Podiatric Medical Education is working fairly hard on that, but we do have a task force. I believe Jeff Robbins is leading that task force to continue to monitor that, and we're acutely aware of the need. You can't increase the number of students and not keep pace with the number of available residency training programs. Yes?
Were you aware of the study that was going on through California School of Podiatric Medicine's Cabell Adam? He helped develop a survey in regards to why students come to podiatric medical schools, and some of the reasons why students stay in the schools, and also how to get students to encourage their undergraduate program to send school students to their podiatric medical schools. Were you aware of that survey?
Yeah, I think through the Student Association and the Young Members Program, we've been aware of that. We also, in our biannual podiatric practice survey, we do a supplemental piece that addresses the young member section. So we're trying to gather as much of that statistical information as we can. The study you're referring to will be utilized most by our marketing department to go out there when we try to recruit the students. And we have a very active program now where we try to send DPM mentor podiatrists to go out to the universities, the undergraduate universities, and talk to the students directly. And that program continues to grow, and it's, I think, is what's been part of the success in the increase in applicants that we've seen. Anything else? Yes?
One more question.
Sure.
Do your projections account for the rate of attrition from the profession by people who are retiring or dying?
I think they did to a certain degree. Because that's definitely a part of the mix, is the age of the podiatrist right now and the attrition rate. So to the best that they could, they did. The one problem we had with that is the predictability of the age of retirement, because, you know, when you reach 60, are you going to retire at 60, 62, 65, are you going to stay a part-time practitioner, which we seem to see a lot, is that they continue to be part-time practitioners, so not completely leaving the field. But they did try to do some adjustment on that. And that's definitely a factor, because we have a huge gap generationally from my generation, which was kind of the peak of the baby boom, to where we're now starting to see the flow of podiatrists into the profession. So that's the other part, the significant part of the study that needs to kind of get out to our membership, is to start to go through, if you're looking at projected shortfall in podiatrists, then you're also looking at the inability of the retiring podiatrists to necessarily be able to sell their practices. So they're going to have to start to come up with some strategies on a better strategy on exit from their practice, because, you know, there may not be the market out there to sell it, or it'll be certainly be a buyer's market for the students coming out. So they have to come up with, so we need to really address that with the current membership. You know, 10, 15 years, what's your exit strategy going to be? You can't just say, okay, I'm out in a year and think you're just going to have a flock of people come in to buy your practice, because they're just not there.
Thank you.